In a moment, we're going to talk education and teacher attrition rates. They're quite startling figures that have come to light. I think you'll be surprised by how many young teachers are bailing out of the system. But just before we do, yesterday on Life Matters, we were talking about invisible women, how society chooses to ignore the sex workers in our midst, and also murdered sex workers. The authors of this new book were in. One of the points they made was that sex workers have often been stereotyped, but they operate in all kinds of different areas of society, and it's some surprising ones as well. Here's a call from Cecily from Victoria, who rang in yesterday.
I've worked in the TAFE and university sector, and I can tell you that a lot of students, female students and males, resort to being sex workers because they find it's the easiest way for them to make money. In our current education system, they're not supported by us, and therefore they're resorting to this dangerous practice.
Interesting to hear that. I was quite surprised by those comments from Stephanie saying that in her experience, this isn't uncommon at all. If you want to give us your thoughts on any of these topics, do go to our listener line and let us know what you think. We're always keen to get your comments. That's 02833. Oh, well, I think I've forgotten the rest of it. I haven't got it off the top of my head right now. Oh, yeah, 1430. Thank you very much. 02833 1430 is the listener line if you ever want to leave us a comment. Well, we've been hearing this morning about education funding. Yesterday, opposition leader Bill Shorten committed Labor to multi-billion dollar reforms. It's clear that education is going to be a major battleground in this year's federal election. But money aside, another issue is looming in the sector, and that's teacher attrition rates. Right now, a fresh batch of new teachers are starting their first year. After four or so years at university, they're now standing in front of 20 to 25 plus kids in a classroom. But within 5 years, 30 to 50% of those first year teachers will no longer be teaching. For every 10 teachers walking into a classroom for the first time, right about now maybe, or even on Monday, 3 to 5 of them will leave the profession and be doing something else. That's a lot of wasted time and a lot of wasted money for everyone involved. So why do they leave? Professor Stephen Dinham is the Chair of Teacher Education at the University of Melbourne. G'day, Stephen. Welcome to Life Matters.
Good morning, Kathy.
These are massive numbers dropping out of our education system. Straight off the bat, Stephen, can I ask you whether it's possible that's just a lot of people that simply aren't suited to teaching? Is this just the sorting of the chaff from the wheat?
I think it's a bit more complex than that. We need to look at who actually makes up this group. They're older than they used to be. They're, in the case of primary teaching, about 85% are women. Case of secondary teaching, about 60% of women. And it's not simply a matter that those who leave are not cut out for the job. People have other reasons for leaving. And in fact, I've done some work on teacher satisfaction and resignation for quite a number of years. And often it's people who actually are leaving not because they can't do the job, but they're dissatisfied for various things outside what the core business is. And they also see themselves having more opportunity somewhere else because the skills of teachers are quite transferable. So I think it's a very broad brush to simply say they're leaving because they're not up to standard. There's a whole range of other reasons.
So perhaps teaching for many people is a kind of gateway or a stepping stone to another profession because, as you say, they're translatable skills. What about the challenges that teachers face in those first years? Obviously, you're saying they're older, so their experience of the classroom is now a little bit further behind them. But it's a tough place to stand in front of a whole bunch of kids and maintain control as well as hopefully provide some kind of enrichment.
Look, it's a very challenging profession. It always has been. One of the key things is variability. There's variability in terms of teacher education courses, but there's also variability in terms of when people get into schools. And some people walk into a situation which is supportive. They're recognised as being a novice, but they're also recognised as having recent training. You know, they're supported, they're challenged, people work with them. In other cases, people are left to their own devices. And unfortunately, we had this thing in teaching where we send our raw recruits to the most difficult schools in some cases. And it's a sort of baptism by fire or survival of the fittest. I think we need to do a lot more around bridging the gap between university training and schools, and in providing ongoing support for people, because they're novices. I mean, they're not experts, and the Australian standards for teachers that we've got recognise the fact that people take a number of years to reach a standard of proficiency. So I think in many cases our expectations are very, very high for them. In many cases, they're given difficult classes, they're in challenging circumstances. We can't prepare people for every sort of context they're going to find themselves in. And that's why we need to think about teacher education, if you like, as being an ongoing thing, not something that ends when they finish their university course.
Yes, that no doubt is true. But it is said often that a practical classroom experience, that there isn't enough of it in the degree. How do universities try to address that?
It's quality and quantity of in-school experience. Obviously, we want to give people as much experience in schools as we possibly can, but it needs to be a situation where the university and the schools are working very, very closely together, as we try and do at Melbourne, so that everybody's on the same page and basically there's a strong evidence base to what you do. Unfortunately, there are some beginning teachers who get told, you know, this is how we do it here, forget everything you've learned at university, and then, you know, we tried this in 1975 and it didn't work. On the other hand, some people are walking into a situation which is extremely supportive, professional, and they really get challenged, they really get supported to develop in their professional practice. So again, it's this variability is a big issue. But I think we're pretty unrealistic about what we're expecting people to do. You know, I've heard some senior education people say on different occasions that teaching's never been more challenging. Well, you can argue about that, but because of that fact, we don't have time to help people, which is a very strange paradox.
Yeah, and I guess that the idea of mentoring looks good on paper, but as you say, the variability is quite extreme, and it's only the people that you're dealing with. You know, it's whether you get someone who knows what they're doing, knows how to encourage you, knows how to get the best out of someone. But tell us about behaviour management in the classroom, because this comes up time and again as one of the biggest problems for teachers. And you say it's always been a tough job, but have kids fundamentally changed?
Oh, I think there's been some changes. I think society itself in some ways has become more permissive. I mean, if you go back a few decades, and I've been in the game for a while, the default position was normally that parents would support the school and the teachers in what they were trying to do. In many cases now, the default position is to oppose the teachers and oppose the school and to protect the student. So I think we're paying a bit of a price for that, the fact that society itself is more challenging, more permissive and so on. Kids are certainly more likely to present challenging behaviours and so on. The thing about behaviour management, it comes with experience and expertise, and it's not something you learn in isolation. And one of the things I say to beginning teachers is, one of the best classroom management strategies you're ever going to get is a well-prepared lesson. Whereas beginning teachers often, they're searching for the tricks or the strategies that enable them to get control of the class so that they can then teach them. It's a two-way thing. Classroom management is very much bound up in having good lessons, well-planned lessons geared to the needs of the students, where they're at and so forth. It's not a matter of learning some tricks to control the class, and I think often we fall into that trap.
On Life Matters, we're talking with Professor Stephen Dinham. He's the Chair of Teacher Education about from the University of Melbourne, about this rate of attrition among young teachers. Between 30 and 50% of them are out of the profession after their first 5 years. That's a really stunning amount, considering that we have a teacher shortage looming in the future, and the age of teachers is increasing as well. I understand that many teachers are 50 and above.
Yeah, we have an ageing profession, although that's been coming around a little bit in the last little while. Look, but the rates have been fairly high, but it's hard to get good figures for some time. But again, it's very variable, and you've got to take into account the feminisation of the teaching profession as well. I mean, many people will take time out. They will be seen as a resignation because they've taken time out for child rearing and so on. And as I said, 85% of primary teachers are female, and it's well over 50% now in secondary education. So it's not as if they're lost forever. There's an awful lot of people out there who are trained teachers who could come back and may well come back after a period of time out. So I think we need to be you know, quite flexible in terms of our employment arrangements, because one of the things that sometimes happens is that when people have time out for child rearing, for example, they lose seniority and then come back and find themselves on the bottom of the pile again. But the resignation thing is quite interesting, because there's a hidden resignation peak that I picked up 10 or 15 years ago, and it's when people get to the top of the salary scales. Now, the way salary scales are operating for teachers, it's lockstep annual progression pretty much. And most people get to the top of the salary scale after about 8 to 10 years experience. So there's another resignation peak there, which is of concern. And these are people who basically got to the top of the salary scale, looked around and said, well, okay, yeah, here I am. Do I stay here forever, or do I seek promotion out of the classroom, or do I do something else? And in fact, when we've researched this, what we've found is that the people who leave are not so much dissatisfied. They're people who are actually seeking other opportunities, because they see in other professions people's salaries taking off, whereas in teaching they're stalling after 8 to 10 years.
Mm. But there isn't, as we keep being told, endless money in the bucket to provide exponential salary raises for teachers.
No, and beginning salaries for teachers are quite reasonable. It's what happens after that's the problem. Mm. Now, we've now got 4 levels of teaching standards in Australia, including 3 in schools, and that provides an opportunity for people to be recognised and rewarded for their ongoing professional learning, to have access to some higher salary scales, because basically we have a very flat structure, and teachers at the top of the salary scale only earn about 1.5 times or less what a beginning teacher earns. Whereas in other careers, the salary structures are such that the most able people can be recognised, rewarded for that. So we have a 19th century salary career structure, which doesn't help the process.
Mm.
But the one thing I'd say about teacher resignation from the research we've been doing, we've done it about 8 countries over quite a number of years. When we talk to people who've resigned from teaching, they tell us a number of things. They rate the core business of teaching very highly, even when they resign. Working with kids, seeing them achieve, changing their behaviour for the better, you know, the wonder of people being able to learn, you know, when you get through, and the spark of learning, all that sort of stuff, people rate very, very highly. They tend to rate very lowly the societal stuff that's out there, the perceptions that teachers have an easy life, long holidays, short hours, glorified child minding, etc., not a real job. The other thing that comes up as being quite important, though, in the middle is satisfaction with school-based factors, and this is where we get variability. And people who resign are often resigning not because they don't enjoy the core business, and in many cases not because of the societal stuff they can't control. It's things like the leadership, the culture, the environment in the school, and that's where we'd have to do a lot more work, because you can get 2 schools that are very similar on the surface, and a teacher will flourish in one school and they will fail in another school, and it's not down to them, it's down to that environment.
On Life Learners, we're talking teacher attrition rates. Perhaps you're a former teacher listening right now, and this is really resonating for you. Why did you leave? Are some of these reasons among them? The number is the listener line is 02-833-1430 or 1300-22-5576, 1300-22-5576. Stephen, you're saying that maintaining the great teachers is one of the difficulties, simply because the pay may not be there. Does this cause a sort of problem, a systemic problem, with the private and public sectors competing to get teachers, and the private sector being able to offer a little bit more and sometimes a lot more than the public sector?
Oh, there's not much doubt, and there is a general perception that the non-government sector is an easier sector to work in, which is not always true. But what tends to happen is often the hiring systems in public education in the various states and territories can be a bit bureaucratic and cumbersome, and often people get dissatisfied with that and they get snapped up by a non-government school. So to some degree, the non-government schools are cherry-picking, but it also happens within the government system as well. People tend to favour the higher SES, socioeconomic status, government schools over the low SES schools. So we tend to have this churn that happens where beginning teachers go to a school that's seen as difficult, demonstrate some success there, those who stay, and then they move on to something better. I mean, that's the way it's been for a long, long time. It's worse in the country. It's worse when you're trying to get leaders to go into some of the country and regional schools and the low SES schools. So there's a real big issue around workforce planning. and making sure that we have a good mixture of teachers across the landscape rather than having all our beginning teachers in one sort of school.
Let's hear from Hannah, who's given us a call. G'day, Hannah.
Oh, yes. Very quick. Yes.
Now, you're saying you're saying that successional academics are the forgotten teachers. What do you mean by that?
Okay. So anyone who has been in academia knows that there are the contracts, people on contract, people who are permanent, and tenure doesn't probably exist anymore. And there are the overwhelming majority who are the sessional academics, of which I have been one for 25 years, and we have absolutely no rights whatsoever. So I always look on the teachers, and I am also Victorian Institute of Teaching, so I can get a job in a school, but I haven't been able to. I look on them with envy because they get holidays and all the usual things. But we get absolutely nothing.
Mm. All right. Thanks for that, Hannah. Your thoughts, Stephen?
Oh, it's been a growing issue with the financial pressures on universities to utilise more sessional staff. And yes, they don't have the rights that tenured staff have got. They're also, in many cases, not fully employed, so they're doing a number of different jobs. But also they don't get a chance to become integrated into the life of, say, a faculty of education or whatever. On the other hand, there's a very positive aspect to this because we utilise a lot of people who are actually in schools as sessional lecturers to teach in specialist areas like some of the secondary teaching subjects. So the benefit in that is that we've got people with current experience in schools who are working with our candidates. So it cuts both ways. But I certainly feel for the sessionals because it's become much worse over recent years, I think.
Yeah, indeed, and I'm sure it has. Thanks very much for that, Hannah. I can't help picturing these young teachers in classrooms with all these challenges, and we haven't even talked about the complexity of the modern classroom, children with issues at home or behavioural or emotional problems, physical disabilities, which can add to the workload, and also English as a second language. I mean, that is a very complicated task that we give people who walk into our classrooms every day. And I can see why throwing up your hands may actually be sometimes a sane option.
Yeah, I think it's very variable. For some people, that is the best thing. I mean, until you've actually done it full time, you probably don't know what it's really like, despite all the efforts we might make to give you an idea of it. And some people will decide it's not for them, but also some people will find themselves in those very challenging circumstances where they haven't got the support they need. But it does come back to teacher training, initial training, and you know, we've had a succession of investigations and inquiries into teacher education, including the most recent 2014 report that Christopher Pine initiated, and there's a strong message coming out in that report that what we do in teacher education has to be very strongly based. It has to be based upon what we know works. There has to be good relationships with schools. People have to be on the same page in terms of what we're trying to achieve. We have to pay attention to the quality of people who come into teaching. We have to pay attention to the quality and impact of teacher education courses. The thing is, people often look for, you know, silver bullets or quick fixes, and if we're going to address teacher quality and through that teacher retention, we've got to look at every key point of leverage where we've got some control. For example, the quality of people who come in, the quality of the programs, the quality of the in-school experience, the quality of the support once they begin teaching. There's no single solution to this, like, oh, let's just raise ATARs. Mm. It's a very simplistic solution. It's much more complex.
It's a conversation that many people have been having over many years and will continue to do so. Thank you very much for talking with us this morning, Stephen.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
That's Professor Stephen Dinham. He's the Chair of Teacher Education at the University of Melbourne. We'd love to hear what you think, especially if you're a teacher or a former teacher. How are you coping with, you know, the life in and out of the classroom? Give us a call if you like, or leave a comment on our website or Facebook page. It's very easy to find. In a moment, we're getting some of the background, the history of the Calabrian Mafia in Australia.